Hello, and welcome to the Literati Cast. This is Jennifer Loughran, and I'm a senior agent at the Andrea Brown Literary Agency, where I rep children's books from picture books through young adult. My guest today is Hannah Mushebeck, who's a marketing expert who works at Quarto Kids and has many years of experience in book marketing at publishers and before that as a bookseller. Before we get into this episode, I just want to say I'm recording this intro in late March 2020, but the interview itself was recorded a few weeks ago in late February 2020. If future folks are listening to this, hello. If you don't know what happened in March 2020, well, things got really weird around the world. In the past few weeks, a global pandemic caused by the coronavirus seized headlines and basically upended everyone's lives. In the time since I recorded this interview, things have really changed. At the moment, things are changing literally every day. Today, and as I'm talking, this is March 21st, 2020 in New York. Schools are closed. Libraries are closed. As of this weekend, all bookstores and non-essential businesses in New York are closed. Workers are ordered to stay home. And that's really important for everyone's health. But we don't know when they will reopen and things will get back to normal, or even what normal will look like. The stock market is a mess. The state of the economy is dicey. Needless to say, agents and editors are all now working from home. Many of them are also caring for small children who are now being homeschooled, or older adults in their lives, and basically it's just wild. I don't know what else to say. We're taking it day by day, and I'm sure I will have more thoughts on books and marketing and everything else when things settle down a bit, but right now it's all sort of madness, actually. The reason I'm saying all this is, some of the information in the following podcast is from the before time of long ago last month, 3 weeks ago. I sincerely hope that we'll be back to a normal way of life before too long when all of this information will once again be totally relevant. But right now, in this very moment, some of the traditional tips and tricks and advice Hannah and I dispense is just impossible. Like if libraries and bookstores aren't open and none of us are allowed within 6 feet of each other due to physical distancing procedures, you can't exactly have an in-person bookstore launch party. There is reason for some cheer in the book world, at least. Please remember, publishing is a long game. Books are being bought by publishers that will not possibly hit stores for a year, 2 years, or even more. I'm currently selling books for 2022 and 2023. And publishers have to keep buying books if their future lists are going to have anything on them. So while it all seems really scary right now, and it is scary, please know that work is still happening. Books are still going to acquisitions meetings. And even if things are kind of in flux right this second, we're going to figure out how to make all this work. Kids still need books, and your stories and art are more important now than ever. This week, my agency launched a website called ABLA Reads. That's ABLAREADS.com. ABLA Reads. ABLA Reads. Where we are publishing themed book lists a couple times a week with our authors' brand new and forthcoming titles, as well as a constantly updated resource page with content that might help parents and kids who are stuck at home in quarantine, coloring pages, crafts and activities, read-alouds with authors, fun learning opportunities, and a lot more. Please check it out. Also, if you're interested in buying any of the books we talk about on this podcast, or indeed any book, please can I make a heartfelt plea for you to do so from your local independent bookstore online. Or Barnes & Noble online, or go to indiebound.com. I promise you, these businesses need money and support a lot more than Amazon does in this perilous time. I know I'm always pushing for indie bookstores, but seriously, please don't let bookstores go out of business. Anyway, I'm pleased to be able to share this interview with you. Much of it really is still relevant as we speak about online and other marketing opportunities and a whole lot more. Let me see if I can get Hannah on the line. Hi, Hannah.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm good. First of all, can you give us the quickie version of your career path?
Sure, absolutely. So it really actually started when I was born, because I was born into a very bookish family. My aunt and uncle are both independent booksellers, and my father owns an independent press that he started with my mother on the year of my birth. So whether I had a choice or not, if I ended up in the book industry, is a matter for another discussion. But I have been in and out of bookselling and the publishing industry for all of my life. But officially, I was an independent bookseller for 10 years. So that's from the age of 16, my first ever job in my uncle's bookstore, all the way up until I was 26, where I worked at the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts. And along the way, I was a New England Children's Bookselling Advisory Council co-chair, and eventually I left it all and moved to San Francisco to work at Chronicle Books, where I was a marketing manager there. Fast forward a few jobs, I'm now at Cordo Books doing their children's book marketing. I'm also an executive board member of the Boston Teen Author Festival, and I also acquire children's books for Interlink Books, which is my family's publishing company. So lots of hats, lots of fingers, yeah. And a lot of pots.
Really? So my most recent interview was with a publicist, because this is everything you've always wanted to know about publicity and marketing, but we're afraid to ask. And she answered this question from her perspective, but I know that every publisher does things differently. And just so we're all on the same page before we really begin here, what do you consider the difference between publicity and marketing?
So the quick and dirty answer to this is that publicity is free. Everything that you aim for in publicity comes with zero cost attached. So whether that's an article in the New York Times or a publisher's weekly review or an in-store event, those are all things that you work on, but you don't have to pay for. Marketing, on the other hand, costs money. So it's advanced reading copies, advertising, booking at festivals like ALA or Winter Institute, hosting bookseller dinners, and all of those things cost money. Most publishers will split these positions. So they'll have a publicist and a marketer attached to each title. Some don't, though. And the publishing company that I work for now actually combines those titles. So I'm the publicist and the marketer on any given title.
Nice. So you can answer all kinds of questions.
I hope so.
So people really have no idea what the marketing folks are doing behind the curtain, you know? What are some basic marketing items that get done for every book?
Sure. And I think this is super important because I think as an author, it's easy to feel like nothing is being done for your book. But really, it's just that we don't have all the time to explain all the things that are being done for your book. So if you are on a season at a publisher, there's so many eyeballs that hit your book. So it gets put in the catalog, we're submitting it for reviews, we're submitting it for awards, we're showcasing it at trade shows, we're presenting it at our previews, we're including your book in mailings to VIP educators, to reviewers, to media. So while we might not be emailing you every day to say, your book was well received at ALA, just be known that we're working very, very hard for your book, even if it doesn't feel like you're getting the same amount of marketing publicity as some other authors that you might see that got, postcards in the mail or something like that. There's a huge amount that goes into any single title that is on our list.
And you then create individual marketing plans for different kinds of books. What does that process look like?
Yes. So it depends where you work, and I've certainly done them in a ton of different ways at every publisher that I've worked at. Some are done by timeline. So some will bucket pre-pub marketing plans, on-sale date plans, and post-pub plans. Some are done by market. And I like to call this my book success checklist, which I think is super dorky, but I'm going to go through it anyway. It includes targeting certain markets. So the idea is that the magical rule of marketing is that a consumer has to see your book 7 times before they will actually go and buy it. So that means they have to see it at their local library. They have to see it on social media. They have to see it in an article they read. Their friend has to recommend it. They have to see it in a Bookstagram or post. So it needs to be seen by so many different times for them to actually go and make that purchase, which means that every single market, whether it's the bookselling world or it's the library world or if it's social media, you need to be doing something for each of those categories. So at the top, we've got publicity. Obviously, we're all aiming for those huge reviews and huge articles. So we're pitching for those. Those do have an immediate impact. And then we do what I call trade marketing. So that's marketing to independent booksellers. That's advertising in places like PW or Shelf Awareness. That's going to shows like Winter Institute or BEA. That's booking author events and so much more that goes into that category. And then we have institutional marketing. And most publishers will actually have a special marketer that just does school and library. So their focus is things like organizing the teacher guides or making sure books are leveled, advertising it to educators, submitting for awards, attending trade shows and planning them like ALA and NCTE, and then really targeting educator media. And then there's direct to consumer. So a lot of that has to do with advertising on social media, but it's also working with, you know, influencers who are mommy bloggers or daddy bloggers. You know, it's advertising focusing people to certain channels. It's sending people, you know, to Amazon and working on AMS campaign, which is their internal marketing system. So there's, you've got to sort of hit all these different levels in order to get that rule of seven and bring that consumer to purchase the book.
And there's like, there's things like, where does this person live? Like maybe there's some kind of special hook about the book that is, you know, whatever. Or, you know, is it about pets? Maybe there's a pet rescue organization that they're involved in.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that people sometimes are thinking New York Times, Entertainment Weekly or whatever, but actually those smaller things can be more impactful.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And I've learned that time and time again where, you know, we'll say, oh, well, you know, this author doesn't have a huge platform, but the people that they're connected to is exactly who we want to be targeting. And I always think that the author or the illustrator is the biggest asset in our marketing toolkit, just because they know this book better than you'll ever know this book. And I talk about that a little bit later in the next question, but but I do think that they are honestly some of the best tools that we have to use, and I like to use mine.
So now everybody knows that I send questions in advance. What is the marketing department timeline?
Okay, so obviously this is different for all titles. This is different at all publishers. But basically, what I like to tell people. I've sort of summed it up here. Most publishers will announce the book online. So they'll feed it out through their Onyx feed at about 8 months, which is the perfect time to do a cover reveal. So as soon as that book is available to order, you want to be encouraging people to order it. And I can talk more about pre-orders down the line because they are becoming increasingly important to the ecosystem of publishing. But you really want to start encouraging people to pre-order. So that's every person you've ever met. That is, you know, your high school reunion Facebook group. That is, you know, your aunts and your uncles and your best friend and your book club. That's everyone you've ever known, encouraging them to pre-order. And they really do have an impact. You know, a lot of accounts will start buying their books at about 6 to 4 months before the on sale date. So that's when, you know, indie booksellers are being seen. That's when, you know, larger accounts like Barnes & Nobles or Amazon are placing their orders. And if the book has been fed out to the feeds, but they don't see any pre-orders, then it sends the message to them that this book is not one to watch out for. So if, even if you can get a small amount of pre-orders, it does really send the message to our sales team, but also to the buyers at those accounts, that this is one that they're going to want to double down on their orders because already the buzz is building. So at about 6 months, I tell people to start their pre-order campaigns. So whether that's a campaign where you have an incentive, like you send items to people as a reward for pre-ordering your book, or you make a secret video on YouTube that only they can watch if they pre-order your book, or if it's just simply encouraging them and thanking them for pre-ordering your book. At about 5 months, I tell people to share their book on social media at least once a week. And I don't mean post the same post, the same thing over and over again. I mean, share different parts of the process. I think people are really fascinated about, you know, an author's journey to publishing. And anything you can share about the process is really useful. Share what your manuscript looked like. Share where your inspiration came from. You know, if you were sitting on a rock by a river when you thought of your idea, like take a picture of that rock and tell your story. There's a lot of ways that we can be creative about promoting without being too salesy.
And I will say too, just to interject, I think that a lot of times people are shy. They're either, you know, maybe they're nervous or they, whatever. They think that they don't want to talk about themselves too much. But I promise you, you're not overdoing it if you do it once a week.
Absolutely.
Like, people will appreciate it, actually. And every week you'll have people say, oh, I had no idea you had a book out.
Exactly.
And you'll be like, really? I've been talking about it for 6 months.
Yeah, so absolutely. The way that social media algorithms work, not everyone who you're friends with is going to be seeing what you post. So even if you're posting similar content, new people will be coming to it. And also, like, especially for the debuts, publishing a book is a huge, huge deal. You are absolutely allowed to celebrate that and to celebrate your journey to publishing, because that is no small feat. You know, it's probably taken you a long time to get there, and it's something that people want to hear about. Okay.
And I mean, obviously you should still promote other people's work too, and don't just be selling. But if 15% of your posts are bragging about your book, good. Anyway, go on.
I agree. I like this. At about 4 months, I tell people to start planning their book launch if they want to do them. I think people feel the pressure that they have to. If you are like a stay-at-home introvert, never want to see another person, just want to write your books, that is absolutely fine. We have other tools in the world to promote books than just doing book launches. But if you want to celebrate with your friends and family and everyone you've ever met, then by all means, that's something that you should start planning. At about 3 months, I would ask people to continue to promote their pre-order campaigns. And then I like to tell my authors to introduce themselves to the gatekeepers in their community. So whether that's walking into your local library, or going to a bookstore and buying books. I can't underline this enough. Bookstores will not want to support you if you buy your books on Amazon and then tell them about it. I've had this happen a couple of times where, you know, authors are asking me, why won't my local independent bookstore carry my book? And that's likely because they've never been in there before in their lives and they haven't talk to them and seen what they liked and supported them in their own way. So I always tell people, go into your bookstore, introduce yourself, let them know that you have a book coming, and then buy something and support them. I also tell them to email their friends and families. If you have any connection to people in their world, they should know that you've written a book, because that's a huge deal.
Can I tell you a horror story? Wait.
Oh my God, please do.
I had an author once. I was hosting an event for them at the bookstore, a launch party event. They had a bunch of people there, like, I don't know, 40 people. We had a big old pile of their book, and they told the audience to go buy the book on Amazon.
No. Oh no.
My God.
Sometimes you don't think you have to have that talk with an author, but clearly, you know, we still do. So I'm glad that that we're having this conversation for all the new authors out there. Definitely don't do that.
Yikes. Anyway, go on.
At about 2 months, I tell people to enlist their friends and families to become champions of your book. This, to pivot back to the online retailer, this is a way that you can offer people copies of your book if they would agree to write a review for you. Something that people might notice is that the book cannot be reviewed before it goes on sale on sites like Amazon, on Goodreads. So you need a sort of support team to get in there on the first day. Obviously, you know, you want them to be writing positive reviews, but just giving them a copy of your book and asking them to do this favor can really go a long way. If, as a consumer now, if I'm ever buying anything online at all, I always read the reviews, and the same goes for books. If there's a book that's sitting there and it has zero reviews, the consumer is almost immediately put off. So it is important to sort of plant friendly reviews, if you will, along the way. So I always sort of ask people to get together a support team, people who are going to buy the book anyway, and support in that way. So Goodreads is great. Amazon's great for doing that. If you know any booksellers, ask them to review on Edelweiss. It goes a really long way in supporting the book. And there's lots of other online accounts that you can do it on too. And then at 1 month, start your social media countdown. So I've had people do this in really creative ways. I have an author this year who wrote a book about how to make slime, which is a huge thing that I had no idea about until this year. And now I'm obsessed. It's so much fun. And she actually did a countdown where every single day she would make a number out of slime and then she would smush it in a video. So, you know, whatever your countdown is, something creative like that, or simply just like letting people know that the day is coming when your book releases, really helps to build the anticipation and get people excited with you. And then on your on sale date, you party. I think it's important to say that there are a lot of things you can do post pub. It's not all just until the on sale date and then you sort of step away. I think it is really important to continue to promote the book for years and years. So that's, you know, whether it's running giveaways to donate copies to your local libraries or getting people to share reviews and feedback or continuing to do events. I think those are all really important.
Did you know there's a whole slime museum in New York?
Oh, I have been to the slime museum in New York.
Oh my God. Can you send a picture?
I will, absolutely. It was amazing. I took off my shoes and my socks and I walked on a river of slime and I did not know the delight that that would be. It was amazing.
Incredible. Okay. So sometimes authors have no clue about promotion or anything like that. They're fine just going with the flow. But sometimes you get the authors that have a lot of really big ideas about their book and they want to do a lot of stuff to promote it. They're like, send me on tour. Put me in, coach. Does that scare you or get you excited?
Okay, so disclaimer, it depends. If your big idea is that I should pitch Oprah, trust me, I've heard it a million times before. But no, honestly, I love when authors have ideas. I think the most important thing to take away from this is the way in which those ideas are delivered to me. One thing that people should know is that marketing publicity people are notoriously understaffed and have very, very little time. We are often given 40 plus titles a season to market. So we have a lot of children that we need to pay attention to. And so if you're sending an idea every single week in a single email, then eventually I'm going to stop responding to those. The best thing that you can do is to really have a think about all of your ideas, put them in a document and deliver them to me once so that we can have a conversation about what the best ideas are to pick. If it's every few days, trust me, they're just going to get lost. But I can tell you what I really want to know from authors. I really want to know where they see their books. So if your book is about turtles and you have an in with a renowned turtle reporter, I want to know that. If you're an expert in your field, I want to know who is also an expert in that field. Every time I work on a new book, whatever subject it is, just like with the slime book, I had to learn all about this huge and massive slime world that exists. And I'm happier that I am. Like, slime is amazing. Everyone should play with it. It's amazing. But I do have to start fresh sort of every new category that I take on. So any information that you can give me about your world is better. So if there's major turtle conferences that I don't know about, tell me. If there's a turtle book award, tell me. If there's like a celebrity who's like, save the turtles, which is like a thing. That is totally a thing. Tell me. I also want to know if, you know, you have a cousin that's a Kardashian or something. That would be super, super helpful. But mostly I'm excited by an author who's like willing to do the work and is willing to promote the book as hard as I am. Often if I get the sentiment that you're not interested, then I'm less interested. You know, if I have to hound you to make a Goodreads author profile for months, then it tells me that you're not super invested. And while it is absolutely my job to market the book, I can tell you when your marketer loves your book, it can make such a huge difference. There have been books that I've been actively told to like stop working on and pivot to other titles, but because I loved it so much, I would go the extra mile and work overtime and work super hard for it. So absolutely get your marketer on your side, and be patient with them, because they have a lot of authors and they usually have a lot on their plates.
Absolutely. So what are some things an author who, let's say maybe they're with a very small publisher, there just isn't any budget for any bells and whistles, maybe there's no marketing at all really, and they're kind of on their own. What are the most important things that an author alone should be doing?
Okay, so I have worked at small publishers that have very little marketing budget, so I can definitely answer this question. I think the thing that I've learned in the last few years is the importance of reviews, whether that is reviews from booksellers on Edelweiss, or if that's reviews on Goodreads or Amazon, they're super, super valuable. They're becoming more and more valuable, in fact, over time as people start to move online and such. So absolutely do what you can to garner reviews, run contests, offer your friends candy, bribe them, whatever you need to do. Definitely get reviews. That's going to hugely help. I would also say cherish your booksellers, especially your independent booksellers. Go to indies whenever you're traveling, buy books from them, send them love notes, maybe with food treats. I used to love those when I got them. And when you're posting about your book, make sure you're linking to their sites as well. I can't tell you how important that is. You know, you almost don't even need to mention Amazon, just because a lot of people are going there already. So be sure to celebrate the other accounts that maybe don't get as much sharing. So if you're going to a local indie, you know, post about it. Post about the amazing bookstore and share. A lot of them have IndieBound, which is a online retailer site, you know, which has almost all books listed. So post about your book and link to their site. It really goes a long way. Same goes to librarians. Send them notes, send them chocolate, visit libraries, go into libraries, tell them about your story. They're really fantastic at being gatekeepers. You were going to say something.
I don't remember. I was going to say something. Okay. Yes. Oh, basically, I do think that booksellers, when you link to them on social media, if they are a social media savvy bookstore, they will always retweet you or repost about your book. Like, we love our local authors, and when our local authors like give us social media love, we always return it like threefold. So I think that it's really smart
that
to
is a
befriend
smart
them. Yes. Anyway.
I recently, you know, we're in political campaign season, which I will not talk about. But I was thinking about how book marketing campaigns are kind of like political campaigns, in that a lot of them use grassroots marketing. I mean, I got a postcard in the mailbox last week, and I was like, huh, they still send these. Because I think that people, you know, word of mouth is really, really important in book marketing. A lot of the gatekeepers that we rely on for our book information are still operating the way that they did, you know, 20 to 30 years ago. So a lot of other products have moved into, you know, digital marketing and these really sophisticated ways of marketing. But actually, word of mouth is a huge deal. Like, making connections, forming relationships, and working with those gatekeepers to get your book out there is just as important as it always has been. Now we just all have Twitter. So I think it's really important to like go and physically introduce yourself. I remember when I was a bookseller, and Aaron Becker, who's the author of The Journey, which won a Caldecott honor several years ago, came up to me in this like really adorable, shy way and said, you know, I have a book coming out, which as a bookseller, sometimes you brace yourself, because sometimes it'll be a book that they've, you know, self-published on Amazon, and you have to sort of figure out your policy for your store. But when he told me what his book was, I immediately had gushed about it earlier that day in the Candlewick catalog, and was so excited, and we formed this incredible relationship, and I will sell that book until the day I die. Even not yes. even working for his publisher. So I think it is really important. Booksellers, bloggers, librarians, we love gossip and our gossip is books.
Yes. Oh my God. That is so true.
Go to a conference and it'll just be like people trying to force other people to read the books that they love.
Yeah. And I mean, I know that people can be really shy and everything, but like, look, we're all just nerds, you know?
Yes.
We want to talk about books. We want to befriend you. Like I will cling to anybody who's like, if I recommend a book and they buy it and they read it and they come back to me and say, oh my God, I love this book. They're my best friend.
Yes. For life.
For life.
Your blood sisters.
Yeah, totally. So you mentioned social media. What advice do you have to folks who maybe they're new writers, maybe they're just starting to establish their presence on the social meds?
Okay. I get this question a lot. Number one tip is do not make your handle the title of your book. This has happened to me so many times because you will write other books. Even if you don't think you'll write other books, times will change. So I have a lot of people who are like, this is a really smart idea because I'm going to make a social media presence for this one book. And they put all this time and energy into getting followers. And then they write another book and the branding is just all off. So use your name. Don't use, you know, your maiden name or your, I mean, use the name that is printed on the book like it's printed on the book. If you have a middle initial on the book, put the middle initial in your handle. It's really important for searchability that your name is clearly stated. You know, if you don't put, you know, book girl 123 or whatever, you know, like put your name as an author. That's super, super helpful. I've even told people 8 months before anyone even knows that they're going to be an author to save those handles on social media, because they do get snapped up pretty quick. Even if you're writing a book and thinking one day you might be an author, reserve those handles because it might come in handy one day. I also tell people to think about what they're posting. So when you're making a post, what does your post offer to the world? If it's a picture of your breakfast, that's totally fine, but it better be like a gorgeous, delicious, yummy breakfast that everybody wants to eat. If it's a selfie, totally fine. But what were you thinking about when you took the selfie? How does it connect to your life as an author? You know, followers now are quite sophisticated and they expect free content. So if they're following you as an author, that means they're interested in your book or in your career as an author. They're not necessarily wanting to see pictures of, you know, your family holiday or things like that, people that they don't know. So definitely create new profiles. You know, I think we've seen it happen where they're like, oh, I'll just use my personal one. And then they grow in popularity. And then all of a sudden, they have to create a new profile just for their professional. It's better to just start with a clean slate, start with an author specific profile that's separate from your personal content. You know, I think a lot of people are becoming more savvy about privacy. And, you know, you don't necessarily want your grandbaby's pictures to be available to the wide public. The other thing is to make sure that your author profile is public, because I've had people who on their websites linked to their personal Facebook pages that you can only see if you friend them. So it is important to have a public facing profile as well. And then we already talked about linking to all retailers, making sure that you link to your local indie. You know, if you do see your book at Barnes & Noble's, take a picture and link to there. You know, they need our help too these days. And then also make sure that your book is listed everywhere. So I have people who are authors, but they don't put it in their profiles. You know, you want to make sure that there's a link to your book all the time and it's easily accessible. You only want people to have to take 2 seconds to find your profile and to be able to order your book. Those are my social media tips.
Excellent. When we were setting this podcast up, you mentioned that you wanted to say stuff about Amazon promotion. I'm allergic to Amazon, as we've discussed. So I don't know what you were talking about when you said that. So would you enlighten me?
Well, firstly, it like hurts my indie bookseller heart to talk about it. But realistically, if you want to be an author today, you cannot ignore that Amazon does play a big part, even if it's just as a book searching tool, which a lot of people use it for. So the analogy that I give to my authors is that the Amazon algorithm is like a houseplant. If you feed the initial information about your book to it, you bring it home, you put it on your windowsill, and then you never touch it again, it will die. So the way in which you feed it and nurture it is by giving it new information. So that means creating an Amazon profile and constantly updating it. You have opportunities to link blog posts, to link articles. So anytime you get a review, put that on your Amazon author profile. The algorithm, FYI, doesn't even care what the content is. It just sees that you're uploading it and it sends the message that you're active and paying attention, and therefore it will push your book up in its search results. I've already talked about Amazon reviews, but every time it gets another review from a consumer, it says something's happening around this book. We should offer it up in the search results more, which will lead to more sales. Also, when people are posting reviews, ask them to post videos and photos and not just "it was great" or "I liked it a lot" or "best book in the world." You know, you need to be descriptive. Also, Goodreads is owned by Amazon, so that any activity on Goodreads also feeds their algorithm. Okay, I won't talk about Amazon anymore.
Can you, I'm just curious because I don't know, can you make, like, say you have a regular blog or Twitter or something like that, can you make that feed to Amazon?
Not automatically. It you do have to manually go in and upload it, but it takes 2 seconds. And you can also see, they give you a lot of, you know, metrics on your book. So it is interesting to see how the books are doing as well.
Cool. Let's talk events. So I was a bookstore event coordinator in my former life. I know that that's your background too. So let's talk about it.
Okay. So as you know, consumers have changed and they no longer want to leave the house ever. Thank you, Netflix. It is much harder than it used to be to draw a crowd for a book event. So often you have to do an event that has to offer something extra. So whether that's an activity, giveaways, cupcakes, or animals. As an example, back in the day, bless, I hosted Anna Dudney at my store, which was magical. And we brought in a llama, a real live llama, to the store. And Anna Dudney is an amazing speaker, amazing presenter, best-selling author. We really thought that she would be the main draw, but actually it was the llama. And once people found out that there was going to be a real live llama at our llama pajama party, it just blew up. I mean, we had to cut people off because it just got so busy. And yes, the llama pooped on our floor. It was worth it. It absolutely was worth it. So I'm not telling you to bring a llama to your event. I'm just telling you that it absolutely has to bring an extra thing, especially for a children's event. You know, kids have story time every night and they don't know the difference if the author is doing the story time or if their parent is doing the story time. So you have to offer something a little bit extra. I have a book coming out this fall that is written by a prima ballerina, and she is going to be doing performances in her stores. And this is a woman who, like, sells out New York City Ballet, and she's going to be going around bookstores doing a solo performance, which is such a one-of-a-kind thing. And we're also getting tutus and tiaras for those who want to dance along. So there definitely has to be an additional aspect. No matter how much, you know, publicity. The other piece of it is that it really is on you as an author to attract people. You know, partially the publicist can help with getting media. As an example, I recently hosted an event at a Boston independent bookshop, and we got an article about it in the Boston Globe, which goes out to millions and millions of people, and still nobody showed up to this event. So you really need to work hard on bringing family and friends and neighbors and everyone you've ever known to these events, because booksellers are hosting a lot of events. They're overworked. And while they do have, you know, a faithful group of customers aren't coming out for every single event. So the onus really does fall on the author in order to bring them. And if you don't have any friends, then partner with an organization. I had an author once who brought a whole Girl Scout troop to their event, and it was amazing, and it was a packed house. So it's just an important thing to keep in mind, that don't expect to do no promotion to show up and then have a packed house.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that this is why we always tell people, do your events in your town where you mm-hmm. live or where your mom lives. Because
yes.
your mom can be a big booster for you.
Yes.
But if you're going to random, you know, San Diego, and you've never set a foot in San Diego before, probably nobody's going to come to your event. Like, unless you are a superstar, strangers don't go out of their way to go to strangers' yeah. book events. And a bookstore can promote it. Like, we always, you know, at the bookstore where I spend my Saturdays, we have signs, we have flyers, we have email blasts, we have posters up all over town. We do all kinds of stuff. But at the end of the day, the ones that are really successful are the ones where the author personally invited people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And even the best-selling authors, I've hosted events where, you know, there was a big game day at the high school and absolutely nobody came. So I do think it's important to know that, the onus does, it's a sort of collaborative effort.
And hey, you know what? Even if nobody comes, that's okay. That is, as Kate Messner would say, the yes. universe giving you an opportunity to be gracious.
Yes. And have a drink with some cool booksellers.
Have a drink with cool booksellers. Make friends with them. You know what? They feel so much worse about it than you do.
Yes.
So sign their stock. Be really cool. Take them out to dinner afterwards. Whatever. And I'll tell you, that will make them want to hand sell all those books you signed.
And they will. They absolutely will.
And they will.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. Here's a lightning round. Let's get through some stuff.
Okay.
Top things that authors can do to set themselves up for success and also make your job easier.
Okay. I will try to be lightning about this. Okay. I ask authors, tell me how you want me to pitch your book. What makes your book special and stand out? You know, often we're getting a lot of books presented to us, and I really want you to do a deep dive. Tell me one funny, interesting, or ridiculous tidbit about how you wrote this book, why you wrote this book, something that I can include in my pitch that's going to make it stand out. Second thing, list your book on social media, on your website, and your email signature as soon as it's available. Make sure every single person knows about it. The other thing is to learn from other authors. Follow your favorite authors. Watch what they do. If you want to do author visits, ask an author to let you sit in and watch. There are some amazing authors out there that have decades worth of experience, so learn from them.
Excellent. How about the top things that are just not a good use of time or money?
Okay. A 10-city book tour. If you are a debut and you don't know a lot of people in all the cities, we've talked about this, it's not worth your time or the bookstore or the library's time to attract people to these events. Don't spend all your money traveling. Instead, plan an incredible launch in your hometown and then maybe offer Skype visits to schools or something like that.
Yes. What about swag?
Swag? I think
so. Like, I'm talking about, you know, you have special patches embroidered or special posters made or something like that of your book.
I mean, I think it depends. You have to think about how you're going to be sending out that swag. If you're going to make 10,000 bookmarks, do you know 10,000 people to send them out to? And then you also have to consider the shipping. I love personalized things, mostly because I was a bookseller for many years, so I received so many amazing creative things. So even if you're making a small amount and you're sending them out to a few very important people, that can actually make a huge difference.
Yeah, but I would say be judicious.
Yes.
And try to make things that are flat and small.
Agreed.
And don't spend a fortune on them either. Like, some people will be like, oh, I'm giving away an iPad. Like, good God, don't.
Yeah, especially if you have no way to publicize that giveaway. You know, if you've got 300 Facebook friends, then that's not going to get the reach you want.
Yeah, I mean, I put it to people this way. I have, I don't know, maybe 45,000 followers on Twitter. And if I post about something, it will result in maybe 4 sales.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have 300 followers on Twitter, probably the same, you know, or less. So I mean, I just think that most people really overestimate their reach.
I
think that absolutely you have to be available. You have to be on social media. You have to, you know, do all those things, but also don't think that that's automatically going to make you a bestseller just because you have, you know, you tweeted something to 1,000 people.
Yes.
Anyway, whatever. Okay. Authors are wild about book trailers. Do you think the book trailers are a thing? Do they actually work?
I think it depends. If an author has a platform to share the book trailer, like maybe a YouTube channel with 10,000 plus viewers, then sure, absolutely. If your followers are used to receiving video content from you, that's absolutely a medium that you can work in. But the truth is that book trailers cost a lot of money, which usually would be better spent, you know, on advertising your book or on, you know, doing a cutesy mailing to VIP educators. You know, there's a lot of other ways that you can spend that money. And honestly, I've worked on book trailers. I've spent lots of money on them. And then they've gotten like 200-300 views, which, you know, does not translate into that many sales. So I think that there is definitely a book trailer trend that was happening for a while, and they can be super fun. But unless you know someone that can do it really cheaply because they have an animation background, then I would concentrate your efforts elsewhere. Also,
I do think, oh, go on.
Sorry. I just have to say, we all have cell phones. Like, we can all absolutely record a video of ourselves. And if you're going to be putting it on your own, you know, Instagram that's got 1,000 followers, then like, nobody's going to mind if it looks unprofessional and it's just you talking honestly about your book.
Absolutely. Also, that might be more fun.
Yeah.
I do think that it could be useful not to do like a highly produced, super expensive thing. But if you have some kind of video, especially if you're doing a lot of school visits, it could be a cool thing to share at a school visit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're going to use it in other ways like that, then I could see maybe, but like, I would not spend a fortune on that.
Yeah. And they do range. I mean, I think they start, I would say if it's an animation of an illustrated book, they start from like $1,000 and up. So it is a significant investment. And I think a lot of publishers are moving away from it just because, you know, even us with our semi big platforms on social media, you know, we're not seeing the translation into sales. So we're coming up with other ideas to promote the books.
TikTok. No. how do you feel about, we talked about pre-order campaigns a tiny bit. So how do you feel about pre-order campaigns?
Well, I think that if we're talking about it in the sense that you're encouraging people to pre-order, then everybody should be doing this because pre-orders are very, very important for a book's health and success. If you're talking about incentivized pre-order campaigns, I've done a lot of them. And what I have found is that the thing that you're offering for people to pre-order your book doesn't matter so much. It's really, you know, we've done these pre-order campaigns where we're going to offer this like really great item, whether it's a secret video from the author that only you get to see with a special link, or, you know, it's a cute signed print or something. What we found is that the people who were pre-ordering the book were a lot more than the people who were coming back and actually requesting that item. So not that many people came back and were like, I'm in it for the free print, you know, give me that free print. Mostly people were just like, oh, this book is great. I'm going to pre-order it. And then it ended there. So I think everybody should be encouraging pre-orders, but I don't think you necessarily have to go out of your way to structure an entire campaign. If you want to, you absolutely can. And a lot of our authors offer sort of digital content. So, you know, if there was, you know, cut out scenes from your book and you have those easily accessible in a PDF, then sure, offer your fans access to that. You know, if you have
you know, if you have video content or if you have, you know, illustration process video or something, you know, there are a lot of things that you can do. But I think really what it comes down to is people learn about a great book and they pre-order it. I don't think they care so much about what they're getting.
I will say, if you have a fan base, and I don't think that this really would matter for a debut, but if you're like a person who has a legitimate fan base, then if you partner with your local indie bookstore and drive traffic to them and say, if you pre-order from Oblong Books or Odyssey Books or whatever, then I will personalize all pre-orders.
That's right. That's a great idea.
So that way, you know, you're driving people there specifically. They order 100 copies of the book or whatever. And, you know, the couple days before the book comes out, you sit down and write all those personalizations out, and then they mail them and the people get them on release day. I think that people would think that that was really cool.
Yeah, so, absolutely. You know. I think that's a great idea. And, you know, I think it's the consumer is starting to understand that pre-orders are important, you know, as, you know, bigger names and celebrities start having books, people who are even outside of the book world are starting to understand that they're important. And so, you know, we're starting to get an audience that is used to buying a book, you know, 3 or 4 months before they're actually going to hold it in their hands. And I think that's a great thing.
Yeah. And that will also benefit your bookstore, which is great anyway. And that probably means they will have a dedicated page for your book on their website, where you can, like a landing page where you can link. It's fantastic. Anyway, that's a good idea. I'm smart. Anyway, are there, I think that's all my lightning round questions. We really didn't do the lightning part of that.
But I'm sorry. I'm not very good at being short about speaking.
Me neither. Anyway, I know that there are some books you want to talk about.
Yes.
What new and forthcoming books would you like us to keep our eyes peeled for?
This is actually why I'm here. This is my favorite part. Okay, so I was recently on vacation and I read The Mermaid, the Witch, and the Sea by Maggie Takeda Hall, who is a friend and an incredibly talented writer. And the best
and my client.
Yeah.
Yay.
The best way that I can describe this, and I hope Maggie's okay with this, is a like modern queer badass princess bride. I had mega princess bride vibes when I read this book. There was like a cliff moment and and I loved it. And it has, you know, romance and action and pirates and witches and magic, all the things that I'm into right now. And it comes out, when does it come out?
May, I think.
May from Candlewick. So,
and if you pre-order it from Books Inc., which I will put a link, you can get a signed copy.
I love it. Smart. Super smart.
What Amazing. Else?
Okay. I also recently worked on a book for Interlink Publishing, which is my family's publishing company. It's a picture book called Rainbow Revolutions. And it talks about LGBTQ activist history. And the reason why I really love this book, I think there's a lot of books out there that talk about LGBTQ history, but it really looks at it from an international lens. I think one of the things that we see in queer history is that what they don't include is a history of colonization and how that affected queer people throughout history. So this book gives a really incredible look at, you know, how British rule in India affected the queer community there. And, you know, even the different terminology that they used, LGBTQ, is a very Western concept. So I'm really excited about this. It just came out today. So definitely one to pick up for Pride Month. The illustrations are also gorgeous. And then one last one before you kick me off. The Farm That Feeds Us by Nancy Castaldo is one of the books that I'm working on here at the Quarto Group and takes a look at an organic farm all year round and the ways in which, you know, the food process contributes to us eating every day. So learn about farms, learn about the ecosystem, and that will be out in May.
And wait, what about, don't you have a book about anti-racism?
That's right. Yes. It just published on January 7th. It's called This Book is Anti-Racist by Tiffany Jewell. She actually is from my hometown, which is pretty magical. She lives in the Pioneer Valley. And it takes a really concise look at the major tenets of anti-racism. So she looks at, you know, untold histories. She looks at how young people can engage today and unlearn biases that they might have absorbed from adults, and has really incredible activities and action items throughout, so that, you know, every time someone reads a different chapter, they can reflect and learn from what they've just learned, check in with themselves. And it's really a book for everyone. It's something that sort of opened up my eyes and has now led me on a lifelong journey of anti-racism. And I hope, you know, everyone is excited about it. We got 3-starred reviews, so we're pretty pleased. It's doing super well. So definitely go out and buy it.
Awesome. So I ask this of all my guests, what are you obsessed with right now? It does not have to be bookish, but it can be. Mine is usually a very silly TV show or a weird food product. I will go first. And in fact, mine is bookish this time, which is very unusual. So my obsession, first of all, I don't know if I talked about this before. First of all, I'm obsessed with a library. So I live in a very small village and my local library is tiny. And I went there right before the Caldecott Awards. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to read all the books that were on the Hornbook, Caldecott and Newbery shortlists. Mm-hmm. And these are not books that are actually nominated, because there's no nomination process for those awards. They were just books that were like hyped up that might potentially win things. So I wanted to read them. I went to the library. They had one out of like 50 books. Oh my God. I lost my mind.
Yeah.
And yes, I can do interlibrary loan. I'm aware of that. But I was literally going to Philadelphia the next day to go to these awards. I wanted to read them right then. So I read the one, which was the Lewin Pham Bear Comes Along book, which is fantastic. Mm. But anyway, and it did win a Caldecott honor. Yes. but they didn't have anything else. So I went and talked to the librarian and I said, look, I know you're small, but like, how are these books chosen? Who picks them? Like, what's the deal? What's the story? Who's in charge here? And I'm thinking to myself, like, can I be in charge?
Like, should I buy this library? Job?
Yeah, like, I'm going to buy the library and fix it. No. She was like, well, the board is in charge. And I said, mm-hmm. Who's on the board? And she said, well, there's a board meeting in 15 minutes. You can go to it if you want. So I did.
Oh my gosh.
And now I'm on the board.
Of course you are. With all your spare time.
Whatever. It's once a month. Anyway, the point is, because I did that, I've also been trying to really go to the library all the time and get out a bunch of books, because my usual MO is I buy everything mm-hmm. because I'm a monster and then mm-hmm. I don't have time to read any of them. So now I'm trying to also rent some of them so I don't actually like make my accountant tear their hair out. So I'm getting these books from the library. So I got a library book and I actually read it. Sometimes I let those sit in a pile too. But the one that I just finished, like right before we finished recording, was a middle grade graphic novel called Stargazing by Jen Wang. It is about the friendship between a Chinese American girl and a new girl named Moon. Moon is frankly kind of weird. She's big. She's loud. She supposedly got kicked out of her old school for fighting. Like scandalous. She draws pictures of celestial beings and says that she's from space. Like weird. But she's also really bold and funny, and she wears nail polish and she does things that the main character wishes she could do. And then something really bad happens, which I won't tell you, but I cried. Oh. And I know. And it's basically just this pitch perfect story about friendship. It does have a happy ending. Spoiler alert.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
And it's so wonderful. And I just adored it. It was like a big hug of a graphic novel. Oh. It came out from First Second last year. It's fantastic. All your Raina Telgemeier fans mm-hmm. should read Stargazing by Jen Wang. Okay, Hannah, what are you obsessed with right now?
Okay. So, I have to give you background for my story. My mother, I know it's, I promise it'll be short.
Mine wasn't short. You take your time.
So my mother, between the ages of 15 and 18, lived in Nassau in the Bahamas. And that's because my grandmother is a journalist, and she was a journalist in Jamaica, and she was kicked out for writing some controversial stuff about the government. And she moved to the Bahamas and was then a journalist in the Bahamas. So my mom has this like incredible tie to the Bahamas. And she had a high school sweetheart there. And after my parents split up, they reconnected and they're now together, and they've been together for like 20 years. So my mom and my stepfather have been, as of this year, spending their winters in this island in the Bahamas. So I went to visit them a couple weeks ago, which was super as amazing and magical as you can imagine, leaving a
freezing... I was following your Instagram. Your Instagram was gorgeous. Anyway,
thank you. Yes, it was as amazing as it looked, and warm and beautiful, and I loved it. And while we were there, we went to one of my favorite places on earth, which is the Haines Library, which is in Governor's Harbor in this tiny little town on this tiny little island in Bahamas. It's this pink library that actually is on this sort of peninsula. So you've actually got beaches on two sides of the library, so that when you're on one beach, you can look straight through the open windows, through the library and out the other side. And so it's just like so, so magical. It's pink with turquoise trim. And it's been there for like over 100 years. So we went there because they have internet. And when I went in my childhood to this place, you know, I would always spend time there. So we went there, and immediately I met the new librarian who, when she asked me what I did and I explained, sort of went into this harrowing story of how they get books. So in the Bahamas, they don't have governmental support for their libraries. They're independently funded, which means that all of their books were donations. And because the local economy is struggling so much, they don't have a means to buy books. So all the books come from tourists who just like leave their beach reads. So there was like a ton of beach reads for adults.
Yikes.
But they did have this like really magical children's department where every single book you could tell had been read like 1,000 times. And because it's so close to water and the humidity down there, all of the books have started curling. But they had this really proud collection of books about the Caribbean that I thought was super special. And after I did some like heavy Googling when I got home, I found out it's actually pretty hard to find books about the Caribbean. Like it's a very specific category, particularly if you want them to be written by Caribbeans. It's a real struggle. So quickly after learning this, I found out how much it costs to buy a book if you want to buy a book in the Bahamas. First of all, they charge VAT on books, and it's now been risen to a 12% rate, which is just absolutely shocking. You then have to pay customs because everything is exported, so you add a few more dollars on that. So when it actually came down to it, I calculated how much like a hardcover children's book would cost, like say like $15.99, $16.99 children's book would cost. And it would actually cost about $60, which is just so.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Let that sink in. And then think about, you know, the income of the local people living on this island who are earning like $5 to $10 an hour. It's just upsetting. It's upsetting. So my new mission in life will be to start smuggling books into the Bahamas because as a tourist, I can bring a certain amount legally as part of my vacation reads. And as you know, I read a lot. And so I started by bringing, I think it was like 10 books that we brought for them after my conference there. And I posted about this on social media and immediately people started reaching out. So on this platform that I have, I'm going to tell you that if anyone is interested in donating to my book smuggling operation, we are looking for hardcover graphic novels featuring, Black children mostly. Anything with a Caribbean theme is a plus. And obviously hardcover picture books as well and board books, just because of the temperature, they get warped really quickly. So they go through them faster. So,
and do you want the actual books or do you want money for the books?
We would take either, but I have been sending my address to people and they have been sending me books. So I already have quite a stash. And because of shipping and because of customs and VAT, we're actually going to be hand carrying them. So my mom goes back in April to the Bahamas. So she will be taking two checked bags that we hope to fill with books. And already I've gotten like donations from left and right. So if anyone is interested in donating, we're absolutely accepting books. And I told the librarian this and we're in email contact and she's super, super excited. And I'm just really pleased that there is an area of the world that I can really concentrate my efforts.
Nice. And maybe some of our listeners want to go on vacation and smuggle books too. Why not?
Yes, we should all do it. I'm going to get a call from the Bahamian government. I can tell now.
All right, Hannah, and people can connect with you on Instagram or Twitter.
That's right.
If they want to do that. Okay. Thank you so much for coming.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'll see you on the internet.
All right. Take care.
Thank you to my guest, Hannah Mushtabek, and thanks all of you for listening. If you like the podcast, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. Reviews help people find us. All the books we chatted about are up on the show notes on my website, jenniferlofgren.com/literaticast. I'm going to see about having Hannah back soon to talk about what has changed since this chat. And I'm cooking up some other ideas too. Thanks again for listening, and please stay safe out there. See you next time.